Welcome to another Good Areas podcast. It's me, Jared, Tim Burren, and we're going to go through another Footmarks podcast on an article that we did a while back now on Virat Kohli versus Ricky Ponting. And, you know, I've talked about this before. We've been doing these versus kind of ideas for a while. I would say this is probably one of the first ones we came up with when I would have sent this through to Cheyenne one day. I think I had this idea of like, we should do compare great players from different eras and who are similar for some reason or another. And I sent this one through almost immediately. It was probably before Virat, everyone decided Virat could never bat and all of his previous runs no longer counted. But I've always thought these two are very similar in that they are both players who play high pace very well. They both are players who don't just bat, but they bat to make an impact on the game. Like they are willing sometimes to even go too hard at the ball in order to try and make an impact on that game. They don't wait for the ball to come to them. They literally go forward. And they're both absolutely obsessed by winning and what that means in a way different to we just did Sachin and Smith. Sachin and Smith both want to win. No athlete doesn't want to win. But I don't think it's what drives them. I think what drives them is making that next run. But I think with Virat and Ponting, it was literally winning is what made them score runs rather than vice versa.
Yeah, both those batters were like, they wanted to lead from the front. They wanted to be the captains. Mm. They liked the limelight. And their peaks coincided with their captaincy. So a lot of their best years as a batter were also when they captained the teams. And that makes sense. Like even though Kohli's a number four batter, I always felt like he gives number three energy for some reason.
He does. Any other era, he bats three, I reckon. It's just that by the time he comes in, number four is the position for a player like him. I also think that they, and this is more a more wider societal thing, I think they also represent the kind of societies and how their societies were changing. I remember Wright Thompson wrote this big piece about how Sachin was the player of the past and Sehwag was the player of the future. And then like a couple of years later, we were chatting and he was like, it should have been Virat, shouldn't it? And I said, yes, but Virat hadn't taken that mantle at the time. When you wrote that piece, I understood what you were saying. You were saying India had changed and the kind of India that had produced Sachin Tendulkar no longer existed. And the kind of India that now existed was Virat Kohli's India, but he'd like played a handful of games. Like you couldn't have made that point. And if you look at Ponting as well, I think Ponting is very much a reflection of Australia going from that sort of Alan Border, Mark Taylor, even Steve Waugh style to a more of a Ricky Ponting kind of personality and moving on. So I think there's a lot of elements of them being involved in their nation's building, identity building at the same time. So I think they're really interesting. But the reason that we put them together is, other than the fact that I've always compared them, is quite obviously when it comes to their cases for greatness, they are both peak players. Can you explain exactly what that means?
So like a peak, we would associate a peak would be a prolonged period of time where a batter like makes the most runs. So, and that applies a lot with Kohli and Ponting, that before their peaks, you would say it's not that they were terrible before they hit their peak, but you would say they were forgettable. But when they both were in their peaks, you could not look away from them. They're always the ones in the news. They're always the ones in the limelight. And after the peak, they become forgettable and ordinary again, to the point where people question the selection and want them out of the team. In a way, it didn't happen that way with Smith or Ponting. It's not Ponting. Smith or Sachin.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think that's the big thing, isn't it? That they do all of their great career work within a space of, you know, anywhere between 6 and 9, 10 years. And outside of that, you're just like, were they good? They showed flashes of it. And you know, we're now in a period where we are, it's actually controversial right at the moment to say that Virat Kohli is a test great, which is wild to me. And I remember going through a similar thing with Ponting. Right, because it was a long period of time where Ponting, he was no longer a number three. He moved down to number four. I think he batted number five sometimes, man, as well. Like I think there's a couple of test matches where they moved him down to number five. And he's like the most number three is to ever be number three outside of Viv Richards. Like it's like his whole personality is I'm a number three bat, right? And so for him to slide down the order was a big deal. He spent years just not looking like Ricky Ponting at all, but we're far enough away from that now that people don't remember that. And they remember peak Ponting, and peak Ponting was a beast. How much of a beast was Pete Ponti?
Like from memory, he was averaging 70 for like, we talk about the Bradman metric, which is an 80 inning streak that like with the highest average, like his, he would be in the top four or five. I think it's Bradman, like Smith, Sobers is there, Callis is there. And then I believe it is Ponti. That is a very big average for such a long period of time. And then if you, with Ponting, if you extend it, it can go even further. Like there's like 150, 160 innings where he's averaging 60. Which is truly remarkable for a player to have such a long period of time where he's averaging 60.
His peak does kind of, it starts when the 90s are still going. So he was going to come into his peak one way or another, but he does overlap pretty well with the flat pitch era, doesn't he?
Yeah, almost exclusively, I'd have thought.
And so, well, I would say, I think 2000 is still a low average year from memory.
Yeah, I think it's 2002 is the point where it changes.
Yeah, 2001, 2002. Years. And then, yeah. And so much so that when he drops off at the end of his career, that's probably the greatest batting period that we've ever had in the game from 2010 to 2012, 13. I think those are those not the years? Maybe 2009 might be in there as well. I think those are the years of the highest batting average.
One of the highest. Yeah, eight is right up there.
So even when he drops off, everyone is still making runs. So when you look at the end of his career, it looks quite good. And I remember Emil Desai said the other day that Virat Kohli's had the biggest drop off of average of any player with 10,000 or in that sort of 10,000 club. You know, the 8,000 club or whatever, wherever his cutoff was. And I was like, yeah, but you're forgetting the fact that other players have had great drop-offs, but they haven't always been at times when the averages have been low. So Ponting averaging 35 for a couple of years, Kohli would kill for those numbers. But in those years, though, the global average of top six players was sometimes a lot higher than 35.
Yeah, it was close to 40, 42 or something.
So I think you have to have all that in understanding when you're comparing Kohli's drop-off at the end. Kohli's drop-off is when Indian wickets are ragging sideways, when he had to go to South Africa on wickets that probably no man should bat on, and in the wobble ball era, which also probably uniquely targets the way he bats more than it does some other players as well, because he does push at the ball. I think Ponti would have really struggled in the wobble ball era, by the way, but that's a completely different conversation. That's about techniques. How good was Kohli's peak, though?
Again, an absolutely phenomenal peak as well. It doesn't, again, part of the reason I don't think his one looks as impressive is because he still played on more, like slightly more bowling friendly wickets than Ponting.
Yeah.
It's still flat pitches. It's not like completely bowling friendly, but there's still some really difficult pitches, especially like 2018, which I believe is the hardest year in Test cricket ever, where that might have been the only year where you had more fifers than hundreds.
Really?
Yeah. And then, like, we just talk about Smith missed that year. And he's like, he picked a great year to miss. And, like, even AB de Villiers, he retired just when that was happening. You could not have picked the better time to just stop playing.
I think Alistair Cook as well. Alistair Cook's another player leaves at the right time. The fact that Kohli still did really well over wobble ball for a period of time, I think is more to do with the fact that the original wobble ball was quite didactic and it was just bowl at the top of off and middle stump. And that didn't bother him. It's when people start to work out, oh, no, we can combine wobble ball with someone's weakness, which is what happened to Smith and what happened to Kohli. And they started bowling outside of stump and that caused the problem. But we're still talking about, what, two top 15 peaks of all time? Is that where you'd have them?
Maybe even higher, top 20. Like maybe top 10. I'd have top 10, I think.
Is Kohli's top 10?
Yeah, it's not far off, I'd say. Like, are we talking average or like match factor or both?
Well, I think you have to do match factor in this because of the wickets that Kohli ended up playing on. But even average,
match factor, both of them are. Yeah, match factor, both are definitely in the top 10. If you just do average, Ponting is definitely in the top five and Kohli isn't. So it's really interesting to look at it.
Okay. They both play with great bowling attacks, which is a fascinating fun fact. And so one thing that you looked at for this one is how they went on result pitches versus drawn pitches. What's fascinating about this, of course, is that Kohli hasn't played on many drawn pitches. But Ponting didn't play on many drawn pitches because Australia, essentially, they were the first country to be like, we don't want to play on draws. We're not going to have some crap team that's nowhere near as good as us come away with a draw at the end. We're going to bat quicker. And Ponting was a major part of that. So they end up playing on a similar amount of result games as each other, right?
they're almost identical, like about like 14 or 15% of the games are draws, which again for Ponting's era is remarkable because for like Sachin, it was like 33%.
Yeah.
Like that's a massive difference. And like clearly like Kohli, he benefited from playing from drawn games, but I wouldn't say he's like a bit of a draw merchant because if you're playing like one in six games are draws, I don't think you can say he was stat padding in drawn games.
Yeah, I think really in the last decade alone, or certainly since 2018, I don't know how you could. It's not like in the past where you had players like, I think Ganguly's one of them, but there's a couple of old.
VVS as well, to an extent, I believe.
VVS. I think Bob Simpson might be another one. I might be misremembering that. But there's a couple of old players where I'm not having a go at them, but they were impossible to get out on flat pitches, and they made a lot of runs, and they played on flat pitches a lot, right? Like, and so you get that, and then you look at their record in result games, and you're like, well, they didn't really have a big impact on result games, but you got them on that. You wouldn't put Ponting and Kohli are result players in personality and also in the eras that they play in.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, like a weird Kohli stat about draws. If you look at closed draws, which you would say is 35 to 39 wickets, he's one of the greatest batters ever. For some strange reason, he has like seven in such innings and he's averaging 100 in those. Could not tell you why that's the case.
I like that. I like that a lot. So one of the other things is pitches, and we've already talked about it a lot. Ponting ends up playing in what is the greatest batting era probably ever now. I think I'm more and more drawn to that conclusion, looking at some of the other batting eras. I think Bradman warps the 1930s, 1940s a little bit. So I think it's fair to say that Ponting plays that. Kohli starts in that era because there is an overlap, but then plays in a very tough era. So the averages are quite different, five or six runs different in the average overall. But that is why we don't just look at averages, right? Because there was a huge advantage to batting in the pitches that Ponting had played on compared to the pitches that Kohli plays on.
Yeah, definitely. Like you'd say this, even like with Kohli, like there was a period where he played on really good batting pitches in India between like 2013 and 2019, I'd say. Like barring the odd South African and the Australian series where they did good.
Yeah, they played a couple where they did it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So other than that, like Kohli played on really good batting pitches. So, and which is why, like, sometimes I find it fascinating when, like, a bit of a tangent where people are like, oh, he's not very good versus spin. But then it's like, well, somehow on the same pitches, Ashwin and Jadeja were ranked turn abilities. Surprising how both those things happened at the same time, simultaneously.
Yeah. I mean, that's the big thing of the whole thing of Kohli not playing spin very well is actually down to the fact that when the wickets started to be so that only Sanu Gavaskar and Bradman would have probably survived on them. It's like everyone has struggled on spin. Like, unless someone came and sapped the energy out of every Indian player who could play spin, I think we have to admit that the pitches have played a huge part. And if you then want to say, well, the players don't have the adaptability to go with those pitches, I'm okay with that, right? Because I think Rohit did handle it better than Virat did, right? I think Rohit handled it better. But at the same time, we have to be honest here and be like, it would be like all these different players around the world whose batting averages have gone down during when the wobble ball era has gone on. They didn't all forget how to play pace bowling, and no one ever suggested that, right? What we did suggest, though, was with spin. So I think that's fair. I think the other interesting thing about these two players is they both have one stunning gap in their resume that is not a very normal thing to have happen, which is gaping holes in their records. So that's another thing I think is really interesting about these two players, right, is that Ponting really struggled in India, despite the fact he played spin really well everywhere else. And I remember Rahul Dravid saying that by the end of his career, he was a really good player of spin. And Kohli obviously has struggled in England as well. And it's one of those things that probably keep, even before the dips at the end of their career, it was probably the thing that held them back from some of the other heights that the other great players have, I think. And that is why Nasser Hussain decided to bowl first at the Gabba. And this all, of course, reminds me of Hit Wicket, which is a mobile cricket strategy game that is all about making those tough decisions. Who do you want to send in as an opener when the asking rate is climbing? Do you go for the big hitter or the steady accumulator? Me, I like to throw in someone a little bit unorthodox, a bit of a wild card like the general that keeps the opposition guessing. And what about the bowling attack? Do you unleash your express pace early or hold back for the death overs? I'm always tempted to bring on a mystery spinner in the middle overs and just try and break a partnership. Hit Wicket puts you in the captain's chair. You draft the squad and select the batting order and even decide when to use those game-changing abilities. Do you burn your 2x ability to chase down a big total? Or save it for a critical moment later on? It's strategic, it's addictive, and it's more nerve-wracking than facing a Shoaib Akhtar bouncer. Give it a go. Download HitWicket and see if you've got the tactical nous to win.
Yeah, definitely. Like, Ponting is really the most interesting one. At least with Kohli, you can say there's a consistent pattern where he struggles versus lateral movement. Like, even in his, like, recent terrible series in Australia, because the Australian pitches weren't like Australian pitches. They were more like South African pitches or like England pitches. So, like, with Ponting, it's not like that. It's not like he just struggles versus spin in general in Asia. Mm-hmm. It's just that he did well against Sri Lanka, against Murali. Like, I believe he did well in Pakistan. Like, I can't remember which Pakistani spinners he would have played.
He would have played, I'm assuming he would have gone up against Mushtaq Ahmed and Saqlain Mushtaq at various times in his career.
Yeah, and then
Syed Ajmal like the 2000s, a little bit.
Wouldn't that be after his time? Was that, did he play in the UAE a lot? I can't remember if he did.
He did play 2 tests, I reckon, in the UAE. It wasn't a lot. It was kind of before that era of, because remember, Ajmal, Australia was the Australia was the first team that stopped playing against Pakistan in Pakistan, right? Like, they were the they were the ones. And then years later, Andy Bickle was like, yeah, the reasons we didn't go was because, like, we didn't think the hotel conditions were very good and all this sort of stuff. Like, it had changed. It's quite different to why everyone else didn't go. But yeah, so I think with Pakistan, I'm just trying to bring up Pakistan now at the moment. He would have gone up against Rawi Bowler. Bowler summary. So he would have gone up against quite a few decent spinners. Danish Kaniri is probably the one he played the most, though, who I would say is the worst of that. Actually, looking at it, he didn't play many of their good spinners.
Yeah, that's what I assumed, so, because he would have played them a lot in the 2000s, and the spin attack was basically Kaniri. And like a Venera Afridi was both playing tests, I guess.
So he doesn't go up against them. He goes up against sort of the Bangladesh spinners. Obviously, he goes up against Murali. He would have gone up against Harath, I assume, perhaps as well.
Yes, he averages 20 versus Harath.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, isn't it? So I would have thought Harath's the kind of spinner he would do well against.
He did play Saqlain, but I think that was in 2002, and I believe Saqlain was done by then.
He played 5 tests against Saqlain and never went out to him.
Yeah.
He also played 2 tests against Afridi. So you have to say, all things considered, he went okay against those guys again, right? Like,
yeah, like, it's just the Indian spinners like he struggled with. He averaged in Asia, he averages 23 versus Harbhajan, 23 versus Kumble. Even like Raju, he averages 7 against him.
Yeah, well, Venkat like, Raju twice. Is yeah. the unknown great of Indian cricket.
Yeah, like and in the 90s,
I will fight right? anyone who doesn't believe that. And yeah, I think you're right. And so I think it is the more direct to use a my friend Paul McMahon, Gareth Batty's phrase, more direct spinners so that the ball doesn't go up. I think he struggled with that, which is why I was a bit confused there with Rangana Harath. I think the quicker spin that you get in India compared to the more drastic spin that you get in Sri Lanka caused him an issue. And then you go to Kohli. I just think the more I think about Kohli now is that he was an absolutely, obviously a great peak batter, but even at his peak, he was having to overcome what was a technical flaw against the laterally moving ball because of this ability to push forward and try and go through the covers over and over again. And I think Ponting had it as well, but I think the issue with Ponting was there wasn't a length you could bowl to Ponting and keep him quiet, whereas I think there were probably times when you could just keep Virat quiet. And not make him score. And so he becomes a bit of a victim, especially, I mean, we're still talking about him going up against pretty good bowlers in South Africa, Australia, and England. It's not as if, you know, it's not as if average bowlers were tormenting him, right? They were the top, well, it's a bit like when Joe Root was completely killed by Cummins. Like, at a certain point, you have to go, well, it is Cummins.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, again, with the bowling attacks, like, I'd argue Kohli went up against overall better bowling attacks, not necessarily better, greater bowler. And we talked about it a bit in the Smith v. Sachin one. Like, bowlers, like, 4 bowlers averaging 25 is better than 2 averaging 20 and 2 averaging 30, because bowling is a weakling sport, discipline. Whereas batting is like, you can get away with 4 great batters and 3 shit ones. Anyway, you don't with bowling.
What year is a Ponting's peak?
98 to 2006.
Yeah, so if you have a look at that period, the great bowlers are outside of Australia. A lot of the great bowlers are aging out or are like Sean Pollock are injured, right? And they're not the same level of – I mean, Pollock – I've got a memory that Pollock was really good at the start of his career and then tails off.
His record holds up in the 2000s, I think. He's one of the like four bowlers or fast bowlers averaging below 25 in the 2000s.
So I reckon that a big part of Ponting's peak, he's probably going up against, he would have the great England attack, but that's only really one series that's assembled. He has Donald has aged out. So you got Pollock and Ntini. And obviously, Callis is the backup there. He doesn't have to go up against the Philander, Steyn, Morkel attack.
He's going up at the peaks at least, right?
Yeah. He doesn't have to go up against a good New Zealand attack. India's attack is Zahir Khan, I think much better than his bowling average, but still. The West Indies, Kirtley and Courtney are gone. Wacker and Wasim continue to play, but in the 2000s aren't at the same level, right?
So 2000s Pakistan attack is just Shoaib Akhtar at whatever point Mohammad Asif takes over.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But even then, the great Pakistani bowling attack that we should have seen never happened, which is we should have had Asif, Amir, any other.
Maybe some Shoaib, like late career Shoaib as well.
And Syed Ajmal, right?
Yeah.
So even that doesn't fully assemble to go up against Ponting at that peak. And the England attack was really, really good. That sort of Flintoff, Harmison, where you had Jones and everyone else. And he plays a little bit against Hoggard, Broad and Anderson.
A little bit of Hoggard, I think.
No, Hoggard as well. And he plays a little bit against Broad and Anderson, but not the Broad and Anderson that go on to tear up the world, right? He plays against early stage Broad and Anderson. So I think you look at that, all things considered, and you go, well, he's probably not going up right against the best bowlers. Now, part of this, of course, is there are probably plenty of very good bowlers in Ponting's era that don't have great records because the pitches were flat as well.
Yeah, absolutely, definitely. That plays a big part. It's the opposite of batting. We have to deflate the bowling numbers a bit.
Anyway, the other thing I would say about Ponting is, I had this argument with Bumble the other day that essentially Ponting is I think against high pace and against short pitch bowling of high pace really is what I'm talking about here. I think you have Ponting and Viv Richards as your number one and two of all time. Ponting, you couldn't set a field to him against high pace because he can basically play the pull shot from mid on all the way through to fine leg. Viv Richards was just so powerful that even having fielders out didn't really matter, right? They both play it. They both grew up in periods where they learned to play short pitch bowling when there was lots of short pitch bowling around where they were, and they didn't grow up with helmets, right?
Tasmania have a lot of short pitch bowling?
Tasmania would have had short pitch bowling, but not the way that you're thinking. Ponting would have grown up on AstroTurf wickets and matting wickets. Those are really fast, right? Compared to turf wickets, so AstroTurf is not fast, actually. The old AstroTurf gets a little bit fast, but it's bouncy, so everything's coming up at you. So if you face a spinner, if you face a kid spinner on an AstroTurf wicket and you go on the back foot, you can almost play a hook shot to them because the ball just pops up, right? Like, it's that kind of bounce. And
I believe Ponting was one of those situations where he was always the youngest player in his own teams. So is it just because he was shorter than everyone else, everything was a bouncer?
Yeah. And when you played, the first game I ever played, I came out without a helmet when I was about 14 or 15. And I drove one ball, Varun, and every other ball I faced was at my head. Right. That was just no. Well, if he can play, then we have to play him like he's normal. And that's what I got. I just got short balls from then on in. So that is what Australian cricket was like. Viv Richards grew up in possibly the greatest fast bowling pool that has ever existed, right? Like, there was just every island had two or three guys who could bowl what was fast compared to the rest of the world at that stage. It's a bit like Gavaskar versus spin, right? I think there's a big reason why these things happen. And then I think the other thing is that it's that pitches were getting harder. Ponting was playing on synthetic surfaces quite a lot, especially when he was younger. Then, as you said, he becomes a kid when he gets to turf and they're still bouncing him quite a bit. And they're also learning how to play it in a way that you can't get hit, right? Whereas every other generation after that is playing in a way that understands. And Ponting is the last guy to really play without a helmet top level fast bowling around the world. You know, I'm pretty sure, I don't know if it was Bishop or Kirtley, but I'm pretty sure I've got memories of him facing one of them without a helmet on in the middle overs of an ODI where he was just like, fine, I don't need this now. But that stage, that wasn't happening anymore, right? So he's the last guy to sort of do that. And in some ways, Ponting is the combination of the helmet generation and the non-helmet generation, whereas Richards was the other one. I still think, though, that I wouldn't have Kohli on their level, but I think Kohli's one of the best players of high pace I've ever seen as well.
Yeah, definitely. Like, even right now, like, his record, the only one part of his game that has held up is versus 140 plus or 90 miles an hour bowling, which is, again, the strangest thing ever. Because you'd think, okay, he's probably lost his reflexes, but then that wouldn't explain why he's so great versus high pace. It might just be one of those cases where, like, he's bad versus the lateral movement. And then everything in the world is lateral movement, and that it isn't usually high pace. So,
his weakness
gets accentuated.
He's uniquely set up to face Shannon Gabriel, Mark Wood, and Ulrich Norkia in a generation where everyone is Vernon Philander.
Yeah.
It's like he's walked into the Scott Boland generation being like, wait, no, where's Shannon Gabriel? I want Shannon Gabriel back. Shannon Gabriel's a really good bowler, by the way. So again, I think that's quite interesting that they're both set up for that. They can both play spin, but I also think they both have their issues with spin in certain ways. But when the pitches were fine, Kohli was fantastic against spin. So
yeah, Kohli's like, he's one of those, like, he's a like an elite player of spin if the pitch is normal. Like, if it rags, I don't think he's very good. This is quite different than you'd say, like,
well,
Sehwag or a Gavaskar.
So,
kind of a better.
I just wonder if his overall issue, and you watch him get bowled by Moeen Ali, and I've been thinking about this more and more, his overall issue is that he might be one of the best players of lower bounce, he might be one of the best players of higher bounce, of fast bounce, of everything else, but he's not an elite player of lateral movement, whether it becomes spin or it comes from pace. Right. And so there's a certain point at which his technique, there's sort of it's the pushing at it. Do you know what I mean? Whereas you compare that to someone like Kane Williamson, who is very good at lateral movement, right? Because, and Rahul Dravid, because they play it right under their eyes at the last minute and they can adjust. How does Kohli adjust? He has to make such a firm decision. And I think if you go back, I think Ponting had some issues with lateral movement as well. Like, I do think there are some, certainly some issues within his game that came from it. But at their peak, they both overcome that by being so incredibly athletic and their ability to almost smother the ball that it doesn't matter as much. And when that goes away, we have a different kind of player. And this is the last thing that we'll bring up with these two. They are both peak players. But this isn't a particularly rare thing. And I think other people who don't look at these sorts of patterns that we do over and over again don't understand that there are a lot of great players who are only great for 5 years, 8 years, 9 years. On either side of that, they're actually quite ordinary. And the players that we looked at were people like Javed Miendad, Gordon Greenidge, Hashim Amla. I remember when Hashim Amla came up and everyone was like, is this guy ever going to make any runs? Like, he looks like he should make runs and he never does. And then at the end of his career, he was probably, for a player of his level, he was probably dropped too soon, but he was dropped so soon because it was like, he's done. He's completely finished. And with Miendad and Gordon Greenidge, I think they probably played on a lot longer because they were legends. And it was like, how do you drop Gordon Greenidge or Javed Miendad? Like, they're going to have to keep playing. That happened to Ponting. But the average doesn't drop because of the era he plays in. And that happens to Kohli. And because now every single innings matters in a way that didn't with Miendad and Greenidge, we have lived through Kohli's drop in a way we simply haven't with any other player before.
Yeah, it's like every innings of his is complete, always going to be talked about in social media in a way. It just wasn't. Obviously it wasn't possible with the batters in the 80s and 90s. But even with Ponting, social media was nowhere near as big as it is now. Like, I don't know if you saw it, that the bowler who got him out in Renzi Trophy, he was talking about how, his bus driver was talking about, if you want to get Kohli, I'll just bowl in the channel. It's one of those things where, like, it's so obvious, like, the information. The amount of analytics you have. If you have a weakness, it will take maybe, like, 10 minutes before everyone in world cricket, like, the analyst will just figure it out and go, hey, this is his weakness, just get him out. Whereas you had some buffer in the past.
Mm. Well, I thought Ponting was going to average high 50s, right? Like, I honestly thought that's where he would finish his career. And it's quite a drop. And we've seen exactly the same with Virat Kohli. But it isn't until you start to do this sort of research that you realize that this is quite common. Like, and it's easy. Amla's the easy one to drop. Dropping Kohli or dropping Ponting or Greenidge or Miendad, you are, you know, on you know, it is so hard. The one thing I will give Ponting credit for is that Ponting moved himself down the order. And I never thought that Coley had to, but now the more I think about it is, Coley probably would have been more fine if he batted at number five. There's a lot of guys making runs around the world at number five at the moment, right? If Coley had just gone, do you know what? I'm no longer Coley. I want to stay in the side and I still think I can make a lot of runs. I want to move down to number five. I actually think he would have had a nice, normal, great player exit rather than the more dramatic me and dad Greenidge Amla Ponting version.
Yeah, so about the number five thing, I do find it really fascinating that we're heading to a point where, like, I don't think it's a coincidence a lot of the team's best batters are batting at five now. Yeah. So it's with Coley thing, it's like there is a bit of a trade-off. Like, if you bat him at number five, who bats at four?
Yeah, it's not easy.
Like, yeah. Like, if you're a young batter coming up now, I do think it's a bit like how in the 2000s, four becomes the new three. I wonder if we're getting to a point where five is becoming the new four.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, and we're also in an era where the tyranny of the batting order is enforced more than it has at any point in history, which is weird because in limited overs cricket, we see so much flexibility where teams have, like in T20 cricket, we see this all the time. If the wicket falls in the eighth over, we got this batter. Falls in the power play, we got this batter. But we just do not see that in Test cricket.
As a cricket journalist, I would travel up to 200 days a year, and I loved every part of it, except for one. This little evil pin here, because I needed this to change my SIM card. And when you travel in cricket, you're quite often going from country to country. Don't get me started on how much this would annoy me in the West Indies, but even going from New Zealand to Australia, this pin was the worst. Well, with the Sally eSIM, they sort all of that out for you. They have an eSIM app that you install once, it's cheap, and it works in more than 160 countries around the world. No more turning up at an airport and lining up for a local SIM, trying to give over your passport and your details, and you just want to get in a taxi and go where you're going. No, Sally make it so much easier. You just download the app before you travel and you decide what kind of plan you actually need. Oh, and if you do that with our code, GOODAREAS, all one word, you get an exclusive 15% discount on Sally eSIM data plans. So go right now and download the Sally app and use the code GOODAREAS, all one word, at checkout and travel like a pro with Sally. No, exactly. I just go back to when Ponting did move down to number four. Sean Marsh was the number three, right? So It's not as if they were, it's not as if, I'm trying to think of another situation where you have a great player coming in for another great player. It's not like
Steve Smith is batting a three, right, in that team.
Yeah, it's not. Do you know what? Yeah. It's not like Lara's batting at three after, and that's why you can ease Viv Richards out because you know Lara's coming. Because that's kind of what happened with the West Indies, right? Where they were like, we've got Richie Richardson and we've got Brian Lara. Like, we can make a call, Viv. We're not going to drop you or anything, but we can make that call. And we think we're going to be okay. No one thought that Sean Marsh in 2009 and 10 or whatever it was going to be like that level of player. They thought he was a good player, but they didn't think he was going to be that level of a player. So it's not, and you look at India and you're like, well, Rishabh is really number five now. Does that mean that Rishabh comes in at number six? So who would bat at number four? Does that mean that KL Rahul has to bat at number four?
I think our team thinks that Shubman should be the number four, but that's a different debate. He doesn't want to bat at four. He wants to open.
But we're talking also over the last 4 or 5 years, right? Like, yeah, it's a long period of time that Virat has struggled. If you look at Ponting, I don't think he bats at number four long. I reckon it's only about 8 or 9 test matches. So it's right. He plays it a little bit in 2006, I reckon. That might have been the first time they flirted with it. And then they went again when he had his slide towards the end. So I think it's not like he did it all that long. And it's tough. You've seen this with Alan Border. Like when Alan Border and Steve Waugh are in the same side, right? Alan Border was a number four and a great number four, and he gets old and he has to bat at number five. It would make more sense if Steve Waugh would have gone up to number four, but Steve Waugh wanted to bat number five and number six. So now you have a clog in the order. And so the other thing is Coley has to want to do it.
Yeah.
You know, Australia wanted to move Steve Smith in their T20 batting order for ages. Steve Smith didn't want to do it. Like, sometimes you just get stuck by the fact that the player's like, no.
Yeah, definitely. Like, that does make me wonder, like, what is wrong with players? Because why would you willingly want to bat higher up the order in this era?
How much cricket have you played?
Not much. I assume it's a prestige thing.
It's not just a prestige thing. There is that. And I think it's very hard to say to some players. And it used to be, in the older days, it was a more natural thing. That sort of Clive Lloyd, Viv Richards, Alan Border. They went, okay, young pup comes in, right? But you do need a young pup as well. Like, you know, there's a big difference between Sean Marsh and Viv Richards. Like when Clive Lloyd was moving further down the order and Viv Richards was ahead of him, right? Like, that's a big difference. But yeah, so I think there's that. But I really do think more and more that players just think of themselves as a number. I am a number four. I have always been good at number four. And so if you're batting me at number five, what are you saying about me? I do think that is a bit of an issue. I think Ponting should have batted at four probably far earlier than he did. Not from a form perspective, but just from a, why do you want Ponting out there when you're 10 for one, right? Why would you want to put him in that position? He doesn't need to be in that position. So I do think there is an element of that as well that you could have a look at. But look, it's fascinating. This piece, I think, Sachin versus Smith one, people were like, oh, okay, I get this. This one, I think it was too soon to have a look at this because people are so in the mind space of Virat has been shit for 4 years. How dare you call him a great? My whole TikTok is just people going, I can't believe you're calling him a great. Right.
Yeah. And like, it's even like, Reddit hated this piece, and Reddit usually likes your videos. That's the one I'm like, okay, that's interesting.
And I think that shows a lot of recency bias and also still a lot of misunderstanding about batting errors, right? Of, you know, there's that the artificial mark of 50. I never once thought to myself while making the book, a great batter averages 50. But the minute you come out of that, out of our bubble, you realize that's what almost everyone thinks. Right? It's like, well, if he doesn't average 50, he's not a great batter. And it's like, okay, so how do we factor in Inzamam Al-Haq in all this, everyone? Because he's an interesting player and he almost averaged 50. So I do think there is definitely an element of that where you're just like, I don't think we've fully processed how tough this batting era has been and also how often batters tail off at the end of their careers.
Yeah, definitely. Like, we talk about like 80s and 90s being a tough era, and it was. But even in the 80s and 90s, Asia still had flat pitches, I'd say, from memory.
Yeah, Pakistan did, definitely.
Yeah.
Australian pitches were pretty flat in that era.
Like, if you're Kohli, what country is he looking at and going, okay, this is the country where I know for a fact I'm making runs?
I mean, Pakistan has the flattest pitches of the modern era, right? And he can't play there.
Yeah, even they've gone into turners. Well, let's say they play India, and they're like, okay, they've got great spinners, we'll make everything flat. Fair enough. Like, that's a realistic possibility.
Well, yeah, I don't think there's a place that is a good place to bat anymore. There were some days in New Zealand where it would even out in the middle, I think. And there was obviously at the start of the baseball, there were some flat wickets in England. But yeah, it's not been those kinds of wickets, right?
Yeah, but even the flat wickets in England aren't actually flat wickets, though.
No, they're
more batting
anyway.
Friendly. Yeah, because they're more batting friendly, of course. But I'm like, you see people comparing them, but oh, they're like roads where everyone makes them. They're not roads where everyone's making runs.
So when I started covering cricket in England, there were roads. There are not roads.
The 2000s,
anymore.
I remember that, like that Shami 50, like where Jimmy made 80.
Don't. That test match triggers me so much. I don't think I've ever hated my job more than that test match, where I was just like, oh my God, I'm going to have to sit all the way through this. And I was in Ranchi. I think people are still struggling with that. And they're slowly coming around with it. But when you see someone as smart as Amal Desai going, oh, no one's ever had a drop-off like this before. And it's like, yeah, it's also possible no one's ever had it. Do you know what would have been interesting? And I don't think we had it, but there's a period of time, you might remember this, in like the late 70s to early 80s where batting averages drop off a cliff. And
yeah,
I've never been able to
81. Yeah.
I've never been able to fully understand what happened other than the fact that there was obviously Kerry Packer was taking some of the best players in the world away, and maybe there was an issue. I don't know, you know, that affected some of the teams. But it doesn't look like that's the case. It just looks really weird. It would be interesting to see if there was a player who was like great from the mid 60s and through till the 80s, and then how they, or three or four players, but I don't know, because Boycott plays until the mid 80s. Glenn Turner's a tricky one because he doesn't play many test matches. Me and Dad is pretty good until the 90s. Gavaskar might be in there as well. But I think that would be an interesting one. But I still don't know what caused that. So it's harder to diagnose it than it is with anything else. But I think we both agree that Ponting is the better player. And I don't think we came into this one thinking that was ever going to, we were going to have a big argument about this one. I could be wrong. For me, Ponting had a better peak. So if they're both peak players, that's really important. And the other thing for me is that Ponting batting higher up the order has more of an impact, especially in the way that he plays, than Kohli does coming in at number four. And I generally lean towards the players who are slightly higher up the order because, you know, if you're 40 for one and Ponting comes in, you're under pressure from the moment he walks out there. And that's very different from 80 for two with Kohli. I think it's a very different kind of, the game, by the time Kohli has come in, unless there's two early wickets, most of the time the game tempo has been set and he can play a part in changing it. Whereas I always felt that Ponting was always changing the game situation when he came in. I would go with that.
Yeah, we looked at it as well, right? Like when Ponting enters before the 10th over, his record's better than when he comes in after. Yeah. Which I still don't think I can make sense of. I assume it's part of it's because his early career was lower down the order, so that might warp the numbers.
He batted at six for a long time. He had a very... Yeah. It's another thing. It's Kohli, how many tests did Kohli bat at five and six? Would it have been many?
Five would, like a fair amount at five because he played with Sachin for a year or two.
Yep. So he batted at five because Ponting had an armchair ride because they tried him at three and I reckon he made 80 or 90 against the West Indies and it was one of the streakiest 80 or 90s, right? Like he wasn't in control of what he did and they were just like, he's not ready to bat up the order yet and they moved him down to six and then he averages like 50 at number six and just absolutely has like a, he has like a Garfield Sobers record at six where he's like, okay, this, you know, he would have ended up averaging 90, I reckon, if he stayed at six. And then he comes up the order and obviously, you know, completely, and then he's at his peak by the time he's at number three. But he did have a very, you know, again, you look at modern players, they don't have armchair rides anymore. Like, who's the last batter? Asad Shafiq, maybe? Who had a real armchair
Kohli,
ride?
Like, I guess technically Kohli would, if he started at like six, then moved to five, and then four. Like, at least there's a semblance of normalcy there.
How long was he down the order, do you reckon, though, with Kohli? That would be my only
I know
question.
For a fact, like, when he was playing with Sachin, he was not number four.
Yeah, it couldn't have been, could he? Did Sachin move down to five?
No. Sachin, at least in the last test, he was not a number five.
Okay, but even if you look at Kohli, it's 27 innings at five, right? Whereas,
I'd assume a lot of that is also Night matches. Watchman.
Yeah, there'd be a couple of Night Watchmen. Yeah. Whereas I think if you look at Ponting, I think, isn't it 40-odd test matches at number six? Or maybe I just had it in front of me, actually.
Yeah, fair.
Ponting was 33 test matches at number six, and he ends up at number three, whereas Kohli is 27 matches at number five and ends up at number four. I think that's a more normal modern thing that Kohli did, whereas I think Ponting's is more the old-fashioned, you know, I think Dean Jones made his debut batting at number seven, and Shivnarine Chandrapal might have made his debut batting at number seven. Like, you just can't, that's just not how modern cricket is. You are hired.
Yeah,
to come in
it feels for
a
like it's the other way around now for some reason. Like people seem to just be in the top three, and then once they realize, okay, this guy's no good versus the moon, well, let's find some middle order spot for him.
Yeah,
like Ollie Pope is an example of that. Where they're like, okay, he's not making any runs at like three. Let's try see if he can make any runs at six, which is weird because he wasn't making any runs at six, which is why they moved into three.
Yeah. No, I agree. Varun, thank you very much. We both have Ponting on this one. Another great chat and. We've got some more coming. I don't know what they are, but there's always something more coming on goodareas.co.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.